Hey y'all, welcome back to another episode of Bed Talks. I am so excited about our guest today. Her name is Vitali Buford. I found her on Instagram. I just thought her handle was the best. It's called The Imperfectionist. So I was like, oh, I got to follow this woman right away because there's so much over perfection out there, and there's so much a need to kind of rein ourselves back from thinking that things can always be perfect. So welcome to the Bed Talks podcast today. We're so happy to have you here.
I'm loving all the sound effects. I am really, really glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, welcome, welcome. And Kate, did awesome. You want to say anything?
Yes, we welcome you. We welcome you, Ms. Vitali. And we are going to get to the meat, as we say down in the South, of various topics, conversations based on her level of expertise and ours.
And I think you reign from the Kentucky area, right?
Well, I'm from Alabama originally, but I live in Kentucky, so
okay.
Yes.
Okay.
And went to school in Georgia, so.
Oh, what school?
University of Georgia.
Oh, go Dawgs. Go Dawgs.
I am.
Go Dawgs.
So Kay is a Georgian. You just like hit on like two areas of his life. He's from Georgia and he went to school in Alabama. So
awesome.
Okay.
So you guys are quick friends.
Awesome.
So tell us a little bit why you started this, you know, conversation about, you know, around being imperfect. What was happening in your life that made you start to really rethink being a perfectionist?
Yeah. So I was actually an Adderall addict for 10 years. So I was introduced to it when I was 21 in college and continued that love affair until I was 31. I've been sober for 6.5 years. And it was because of my addiction to perfection, right? Because Adderall allowed me to work, you know, ridiculous hours, achieve the corporate ladder, look perfect on the outside, be very thin, high performing, all of those things. And then when I got sober, I realized my true addiction was not Adderall. It was perfectionism. And so then I decided, you know, I'm going to write my memoir. I want people to know about perfectionism. I want people to know about Adderall addiction. No one's talking about it. And so I wrote my memoir last year, and it was published in March of this year. But after I wrote it, I just realized how pervasive perfectionism was, that no one was talking about it. People mention it, but they don't really talk about it in terms of it being a pillar of like a really big limiting belief, right? Because when I'm talking about perfectionism, the symptoms I'm talking about are indecision, people pleasing, external validation, procrastination, avoiding conflict, not showing up authentically, anxiety, worry, overwhelm, comparison, imposter syndrome. Those are just some of the main symptoms. And so I've been healing that in myself and then just developed content. And so now it's my life's mission to heal all perfectionists and turn them into recovering perfectionists.
Wow. I must say, I did take the quiz and I found that I am a mild perfectionist.
Okay.
So that means I'm in betwixt two worlds.
You're in the middle.
I think it's interesting what you said, because we do live in a society where being a perfectionist is almost rewarded. People kind of look for it. The pressure is there from the way people present themselves in their images. Social media has fed it to a whole nother level. So a lot of times what we're seeing is just one component, one moment. I always tell people, we really don't know what's going on behind the scenes, but it kind of can give you an uneven look at things, right? Because people could just put or present their best selves. But the other thing I thought you touched on, which is really interesting, is how you got addicted to Adderall and how a lot of these, a lot of kids are being classified now with ADD and ADHD.
Right.
And I've heard about that, especially in college. The usage is really high because there's such a pressure to perform and to be able to study and keep up. And then you go to other countries where there's even a more intense competition that exists. It's an issue, you know, across the board. So, like, how do you talk to people who may have some of these disorders? Because some people do need interventions, right? How do you talk to them to kind of know, you know, how do you let them know if they're being balanced or not with it?
So for me, like my, so I'm not ADHD.
Okay.
I have a family history of it, but I'm not. Like, I just started abusing it. My boyfriend in college had it. He let me borrow it because I had an 18-hour course load. I was working two jobs. And so it allowed me to be, it was the quote, the perfect drug. Like, I got straight A's that semester. It was insane. Like, the amount of hours I was able to keep up with and exceed and excel at that level. And so for me, I got so much value out of that, that it was just this, I mean, I became addicted instantly. So I don't know so much about ADHD and that addiction. For me, it's just educating, because I do believe Adderall is the, like, people who need it, it works. But right. People who abuse it, it can be very dangerous. And for me, I was taking a ridiculously high amount, amount that I've never actually heard of anyone taking at the end of, like, near the end of my addiction. I was taking 360 milligrams a day, and the recommended daily, highest dosage is 50.
Oh, wow.
And so for me, it's just about creating awareness around it, because no one talks about Adderall, because honestly, I think it's the perfect drug. Mm-hmm. It makes you thin, it makes you high achieving, and no one wants that taken away from them.
Right. And you
and
know,
so no one talks about it. We're not just talking college students. We're talking young professionals, working moms. Right. I mean, it's
more pervasive than we think.
Right. That no one's talking about. And so for me, it's just, here's my experience. Here's how dangerous it was for me. It worked until it didn't. And you don't have to use that as a coping mechanism.
Now, let me ask you, you said it worked until it didn't. What do you mean when you say that?
So for me, it was when I started doctor shopping. So one prescription a month my tolerance grew so high that one prescription a month wouldn't cut it. And at the end, I was seeing four doctors at one time. So I was filling four prescriptions a month, which is illegal.
Wow.
One through insurance, three. So, I mean, it was like, and I was like in charge of my department at a very high level law firm. Like, no one would have ever suspected anything. And so for me, like, that is when it got dangerous. Plus, it's all I thought about. When I could get my next refill. When could this prescription be refilled? I mean, it consumed me. Like, it was amazing when I got sober how much more time I had on my hands.
Wow. You know, as I hear you talk, Vitaly, I think of athletes, professional, yeah, collegiate, who in so many ways do the same thing. They may use different performance enhancing drugs, but it's the same concept to try to get an edge, right? And when you start off with what they consider like a gateway drug to enhance your abilities, and when you see that you've kind of maxed out or plateaued, you look for something stronger. You know, so to hear you talk about it on that side, it's still the same similar mental capacity that people will have when they're trying to find something that will enhance them even the more because they've grown conditioned to what they've currently been doing or taking. Do you agree with that?
Right. Yes. Yep. Right.
All right. Now, I'm going to throw a name at you. You said you were from, you know, you went to, you know, UGA. Weaver D's.
Yes. Wait. Sorry, you cut out.
Weaver D's.
Yes.
Okay.
I've eaten there, and it's been so long I haven't been back, but yes, I'm going to go back next year.
Okay, awesome. I just had to throw it to see if you really were legitimately a UGA alum.
Yeah,
well, that was the test, and you passed.
I was looking at some of the things you write about, and one of the things I think is hard for people is decision making, especially for a perfectionist, right? Because you're looking for the perfect outcome. But the thing about life is there really isn't any perfect outcomes, right? But when people describe things in life, we typically describe them in very black and white terms of failure and success. So how do you help people to kind of look at decision making differently, especially for someone who's trying to not be a perfectionist in the way they make decisions?
Yeah, so there are four things. I'm going to make sure that I write these down so that I don't forget that came to mind. But so the first is, like, when it comes to decision making, it's allowing yourself to experiment, right? Allowing yourself to change your mind. So as perfectionists, we want to know, we want to have everything right. We want to make the perfect decision. And so if you can switch to, like, I'm allowing life to be an experiment. I'm going to try this and it may lead me in a different direction, but I'm just going to make a decision. When you can take that pressure off and just allow life to be an experiment, it allows it to just, like, it gives you more space, right? Like, as perfectionists, we don't, like, experimenting, are you kidding? Like, it's right or wrong. Like, I'm either right or wrong. And so the first is allowing life to be an experiment. Second is allowing yourself to change your mind. Right, again, as perfectionists, we were like, no, I don't want to be indecisive, even though we're indecisive already, right, because we've been outsourcing our decision-making to other people. If you can just allow yourself to change your mind, right, I can change my mind. I can do something different when presented with new information, and that's a strength rather than a weakness. The third is living by the mantra, like, I cannot miss out on what's meant for me. So it doesn't matter what decision I make, I cannot miss out on what's meant for me. Relationships, opportunities, careers, all of that. Another thing that I do is I have my clients go on an advice detox. And so what I mean by that is they typically go on a 2-week advice detox, because the reason we can't make decisions is because we don't know ourselves. We don't know what our intuition is saying because we're so in our heads. We're not in our bodies because we've been outsourcing it, right? We've been, our intuition has been other people. Our decision-making has been with other people. Our self-worth has been with other people. And so when you can go on an advice detox, then you're just kind of stripped down to yourself. And then you realize, like, oh my goodness, I've been asking my friend, like, what color pillows to get on my couch? Like, little things or big life decisions. Do I stay or go in this relationship? What do I do? Instead of listening to ourselves. And so the advice detox has been, like, I did one 4 years ago. I just came up with it. I was like, I'm just going to detox. I've been people pleasing way too much. I've been seeking approval way too much. So I'm just going to experiment and do this detox, and it changed my life. And so now it's just a tool that my clients use, that I teach, that can be really, really helpful to help you make decisions and come back home to yourself.
Because I'm sorry, because what it sounds like is if you don't go on this advice detox, you're pretty much allowing other people to make the decision for you.
Right. Because we don't take responsibility for ourselves, right? When someone else makes a decision for us. And we have, like, as perfectionists, we've just gone for so long trusting other people. And it's from childhood, right? It's typically a wound that happened as a young child that helped with survival, right? We got love by being perfect, from people pleasing, right? There was, trust issues. And so we trusted, the guardians, adults, whatever, in the house versus ourselves, right? Like, so for me, for example, like, an example of the trust thing is my mother is an alcoholic. And so as a young child, like, I would bring it up to my dad, and he would be like, no, she's not drinking, you're wrong.
Which really would make you wrong. Right, which would really make you doubt your intuition or what you're seeing even visibly, right?
Right. So in that moment, my intuition, I started outsourcing it to him because he's the adult, right? Like, he's the one supposed to be telling you the truth. And so we get, like, it erodes from there, like those small micro moments, right? I'm like, oh, well, he's right, I'm wrong. Even though my body is experiencing that, I'm experiencing that. But the adult is supposed to be the one who I'm supposed to trust. And so you start outsourcing it from little moments like that. And then we carry it into adulthood. And we've been doing it for so long, it takes drastic unlearning.
And don't you think that affects one's confidence, the confidence to be able to decipher? Because you felt you were a good judge of character. I'm speaking from my own perspectives in the past. And you find, man, you were wrong about this. You were wrong about that. You're wrong. And honestly, for myself in the past, there was a time I questioned my own judgment where at one point I thought I was pretty confident.
Right. Right. Because perfection is a confidence killer. Because we may think we're confident, but it's because we are getting validation from other people. And so we translate that validation from other people, like a great review at work. Someone saying, you're beautiful, you're so great at what you do, you work so hard, how do you know, blah, blah, blah. We use that as our confidence meter.
So in your mind, confidence really truly comes when you have the belief system and it's not impacted by that external influence, chat or influence.
I mean, that's a true confidence, like trusting yourself. Like, for me, integrity means like honoring, like, your intuition and what your body is telling you. Like, you're honoring your deepest truth, even when it's really hard.
Let's talk about that, because there was something you shared before the show that I thought was really important, and it kind of correlates with, you know, bed talks. We talk about everything, which is why we're talking about being a perfectionist today. But we also talk a lot about relationships, and I'm a relationship coach. And I like what you expressed earlier, and I kind of want you to share it with the audience about relationships, because I think sometimes when we love someone or care about someone, there's this obligation that we're like, okay, I'm going to stick to this, even when it gets really hard to the point where it impacts you psychologically, right? And I wanted you to share your experience of how you were able to, because you're not a perfectionist anymore, right? You're recovering perfectionist. You're recovering perfectionist. So you
could. It doesn't run my life anymore.
Right. You're recovering perfectionist. How you kind of leaned into that intuition. But you can you share a little bit about that? Because I think that that's an important lesson to talk to about people who might be in situations where they are looking, just like you said, it can happen in relationships, with friendships. They're looking for external validation, or they're feeding on advice of others as opposed to kind of leaning into themselves.
Yeah. So what we were talking about earlier is, you know, I just got out of a 2-year relationship, and it was a great relationship, but it wasn't the right one for my future. And I had to get really honest with myself. And I was still seeking my self-worth in him and his validation. I was still looking to him to determine my worth, and I had to get really honest with myself. Is this the person that I see, like the success and the business that I am building, is he the right partner for that? And I think a lot of times we can say, well, we don't deserve that future, or who am I to say that, because we're not in that future yet, right? So who are we to say that? I think also our body tells us not this, it says not this, and then we talk ourselves out of it. Right? People are always like, well, relationships are hard. And so you're like, okay, you're right. Or everyone's got their unique things that are wrong with them. Like, there's always going to be something with someone. And so we settle, because that's like the predominant advice out there, right? There's all, you know, relationships take work, and they do take work, but there's a point where you have crossed the line of work to chaos. I think for me too, I had to get really honest about with myself, because to some degree I get dopamine from chaos and drama in relationships. So the back and forth, the making up, breaking up, the getting back together, the reliving of that is a reliving of my childhood trauma. And
feels
so
comfortable.
I had to really look at that.
Yeah, it feels comfortable. You understand it.
Right.
Yeah.
But it was about just getting really honest with myself and saying not this, and also being really honest with knowing that the reason I would stay was for perfectionist reasons, people pleasing. Like, I was willing to stay in a relationship for him instead of me. And I think so often we do that. We get our worth from someone else. We care more about what that person thinks of us than what we think about that person.
Right. Which I always say is relationship red flag number one, because a lot of people are like, well, they go on a date and they are constantly looking at how the other person perceived them, what the other person's experience was. And I'm like, it's a date with two people. So just as much as you're validating how they feel, you should be validating how you feel too. You're equally important. So that's a good point.
I read a quote, I think you had, and you said, trust the power of endings. Trust the power of endings. That was, for me, a very powerful quote, because what it implied to me was there's a beginning, there's a process that not only is from the beginning, but if you trust that process, you know, there is a power of the ending. Elaborate on that a little bit.
Yeah, so for me and my journey, and where I am with my integrity, I couldn't continue in this relationship. He was wonderful, wanting to make all the right changes and doing all of it, but it was just too late. And so for me also, where I am in my evolution, I know that the growth that I want to achieve requires me to step into my own self-worth instead of seeking it from other people. It requires a higher level of growth and self-responsibility and stability and safety. And so I knew that this was part of that initiation, intellectually. And so there is so much power in endings, right? Because we feel and we grieve. And for me, there's so much power because in the past, I've always moved on with another person. So I've never felt my grief. In my dysfunctional past, I always had another guy waiting. So I just relationship hopped because I didn't want to feel that abandonment, right? Because that abandonment wound is probably my deepest wound. Another reason why I'm a perfectionist is to avoid abandonment. So for me, it was just that knowing that there's so much growth with that ending, and that I'm ready for the new lessons. And for me, it was just trusting like my vision and where I'm going, and believing in myself, believing that I'm worthy of the dream that I'm building and creating, and stepping into it, and also trusting that there is a better fit for me out there. Like, I cannot miss out on what's meant for me.
So what I'm hearing then, Vitaly, is you were willing to deal with the hurt, the pains of ending a relationship, and not, as you said, and I've used this same analogy, jumping to the next one or hopping to the next one, so that you could then build at the same time, because now you have a chance to understand you, whether the happiness, the sadness, because all that is a part of the process of building, right? But you made a conscious choice just to deal with what you're trying to build, not only within yourself, but with your brand and what you're trying to do out in the community, as well as within your family.
Right.
Awesome.
What tips do you have for somebody who is trying to break the loop of being a perfectionist? And say you have someone who has broken that loop too. The second part of the question is, how do you help them if they relapse? Because if you're a recovering perfectionist, right, number one, there's going to have to be steps you take to, like, get there. But then there also could be triggers that can drive you back to that behavior.
Yeah. So I think, like, for the person who's just starting out, sorry, I get, like, really into my thoughts and to write this down.
You're fine.
I forget about the second part of the question.
You're fine.
So for people who are just starting out, the first step is really – what I start out with every client is curious observation. You've got to move away from being the critical perfectionist and move to being curious. I believe curiosity is a cure-all for all growth. So instead of being critical of whatever thoughts are going in your head, I want you to start getting really curious. And so typically what I do is for 2 weeks or a week, I have my clients write down all of their limiting thoughts that are coming up. I mean, every single one, because I want them to get really aware on how pervasive it is. Like, most people are like, I had no idea how negative I was being toward myself. And I have them write down the judgments they're making about others, because those judgments are always a reflection of their own stuff. So it's a pretty intense deep dive. And then while they're doing that curious observation, I also invite them to drop the shame, drop the guilt, drop, you know, like, this is just about getting curious, because we can't heal what we hate. And so we've got to turn that hate and that criticism into curiosity and then compassion. Really, the process for, like, transforming our perfectionist thoughts, there's the four C's that I've created. It's going from criticism, right? Noticing your criticism. Wow, I'm being really hard on myself. Then choosing curiosity. Why? Why am I being so hard on myself? Where is this coming from? Is this a childhood pattern? Is this because I'm afraid of abandonment? Is this because, you know, like, it's the pandemic and I'm stretched thin and there's a lot going on and competing priorities? And then going from curiosity to compassion. Like, of course I'm having a hard time right now. Like, I'm experiencing X, Y, and Z. It makes complete sense, right? For me, with my relationship, of course I'm struggling, like, making the final call and ending this relationship. Like, my inner child is so scared of abandonment. And then the fourth C is choosing better, making a different choice. Choosing a better thought, choosing a better word, choosing a better action. So really starting with that curious observation and moving through the four C's. In terms of a relapse, you know, the word relapse in terms of growth, I would maybe reframe it, you know, that as we evolve, old patterns will come back, and it's just an opportunity to heal them again. And so we have to do that again with curiosity and without shame. I mean, a lot of my perfectionism patterns reared their ugly head as I was exiting this relationship, right? Like, what are people gonna think? You gotta make the perfect decision. I need to people please, you know, like, not trusting myself, stuck in indecision. And so I viewed it as an opportunity to just do more work on my perfectionism. And so I think relapse can make us feel defective, maybe. And just knowing that, like, it's coming up for you for a reason to heal it on a deeper level.
And that's the whole thing. You're not perfect. So.
Right. And so it's like, okay, here I am. Like, let's deal with this.
Right, yeah. Right. So this is going to be a normal part of my continual growth, like you're saying. And then there was one more thing, right, I want to ask you about. You talked about the power of action. You know, there's so much power in just doing, right? A lot of times we get so caught up in being, acting, preparing, researching, all things that just go in a circular motion, but until you do, you really can't move forward. Can you talk a little bit about why it's important for people to just take action, like you said, even if it's not going to be a perfect outcome?
Yeah, you know, done is better than perfect. That's like one of the mantras I live by. Done is better than perfect. And it's just about getting into action as perfectionists. We wait for the perfect moment. We need to have all the information. That's an excuse. You know, we're waiting and we procrastinate. When you take action, you actually build momentum. You're stepping into the energy, like abundance energy, because you're moving forward. You're also creating confidence, right? Because action leads to confidence, which leads to more action. And so it's just about starting. You know, the same thing when I was writing my memoir, right? The one, I remember there was a quote in Big Magic from Elizabeth Gilbert, and she said something along the lines of like, the shitty first book is better than no book. And I was like, okay, you're right. So I wrote it, and I mean, I don't think it's a shitty book, but you know what I'm saying? Like,
it lowers your bar, right? Like, of what you can expect. And often we exceed beyond our bar. And sometimes the reason people set the bar high is they really don't think they're going to get that high, but they're going to hit a midpoint, right? They're going to get somewhere.
Right. I mean, we get out of life with what we're intentional about. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not what we wish for, it's what we work for. And so it's about just taking action, and then you like pleasantly surprise yourself, you know, and also not being afraid of no, not being afraid of quote failure, because no's and failure are just signs of success, right? Because if you're not hearing no, if you're not failing or making mistakes, then that means you're not doing anything.
Right.
So let me play devil's advocate just for a minute. You know, perfectionist, you know, trying to be perfect. You know, from childhood, that's what we're told, you know, strive to be the best, Okay. So let me, okay. What if you have someone who, look, I mean, it almost sounds like being a perfectionist is not a negative thing, but yet you've been told your mantra is to strive for perfection. But you're counseling someone who that's all they've been told. So it's hard for them to grasp this concept of, you know what, just remove being a perfectionist. It's not necessarily good for you. How would you counteract that?
Yeah, so I think it's like, you know, it's me talking about that list of symptoms, right? Like when they can open their eyes and be like, oh my gosh, I struggle making decisions. Wow, I'm not showing up authentically in my relationship. Wow, I hate difficult conversations. They scare me. You know, I've been procrastinating. All I do is seek advice from other people. I'm constantly paralyzed by comparison, you know, feeling like I'm a fraud. So when they can really see the symptoms and how they show up in their life, I think that that is sort of the doorway to wow. Like, I thought perfectionism was the way, but it's actually the block. And then also, I think a lot of people are like, well, if I'm not seeking to be perfect, then how am I going to achieve anything? And so it's really about separating the difference between excellence and perfection. Right, perfection is externally motivated. When we're outsourcing all of that stuff from other people, it's fear-based, right? Excellence is internally motivated, doing things from love, from courage, from confidence. And so you can still do that. It's, you know, choosing like fear or choosing love over fear. Like one of my favorite questions is, what would love do?
It empowers, I think.
Right.
So we really have enjoyed this conversation. You got our minds spinning. So you were jotting down notes. We were jotting down notes. Just a lot of good nuggets in here. A lot of good takeaways. I think that our listeners are really going to enjoy. What are you working on right now, project wise? I know you mentioned the memoir, so you should tell us the name of the book. But is there anything else coming up that we should be on the lookout for?
Yeah. So my book's called Addicted to Perfect, and it's on Audible, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, so you can order it. And yes, I would love for reviews there's a few things coming up. I'm relaunching my podcast. It's called Embracing Imperfection. And so that'll be out probably in December. And then really for me, I am bringing a lot of my perfectionism training to the workplace, into corporate America.
Oh, that's such a good place for it.
So that's really what I'm focusing on, but really about healing the person, because if, you know, the day of like your personal and your professional life being separate entities no longer exists.
Right.
And so when you can heal the person, you heal the professional.
Awesome.
Anything you want to add, Kay?
No, let's, you know, make sure we find and maintain a balance because, again, there are no perfect individuals, but yet we can still strive to be excellent.
And please follow Vitali Buford on Instagram at The Imperfectionist. I think you will find her reels quite entertaining, but educational too. And just in general, it'll give you some things to help you if you think you are perfectionist to break free of perfection. So thank you so much again for being on the show today. So we are going to end the show on that note. Thank you, Vitali, for coming on the show. You can find our podcast on the Anchor app, iTunes, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. We'll be back with another Bed Talks podcast soon. And thank you guys for tuning in. Until next time, XOXO.
I might never be a knight in shining.